Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Carrick, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Sit in with Jeremy on Thursday morning as he brings you the headliner's ball. Break on through with Pam on Friday. Join Afazana and Babla on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And then every other Sunday, join Stelina and Arcana as they delve into the depths of darkness. These shows are designed to juggle outside the lines with rich raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. What's up?
Not a thing.
Yep. Just the ceiling so far, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's good, because if that comes crashing down, there's a problem. So, yeah, great topic choice for tonight. Fun quotes from Keith Richards. I can say they're all fun, but you know what I mean? Like fun as in, you know, fun to play with. Very cool choice.
Well, even he's got to admit that he's outlived himself a few times over.
Yep. Exactly. It's like that meme that says we have to take care of the world so we can leave it a better place for Keith Richards.
Yeah. Funny thing is, he should have been dead 40 years ago.
Right? But he just keeps on plugging along, defying the odds. But yep, for sure. Yeah, gotta love that crazy style of his. Very cool. All right. Well, you know, we did end up with a pretty full board, a great lineup of poetry, and so I guess whenever you're ready, we can go ahead and get started.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. Well, I happened to stumble across, while I was doing some searching on all poetry, a classic poem that I thought fit really well with tonight. And that is, I Got Stoned and I Missed It by Shel Silverstein. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us.
I Got Stoned and I Missed It by Shel Silverstein. I was sitting in my basement. I just rolled myself a taste of something green and gold and glorious to get me through the day. Then my friend yelled through the transom, grab your coats and get your hat, son. There's a nut down on the corner giving dollar bills away. But I laid round a bit, then I had another hit. Then I rolled myself another Obama. Then I thought about my mama. Then I fooled around, played around, jacked around a while, and then I got stoned and I missed it. I got stoned and I missed it. I got stoned and it rolled right by. I got stoned and I missed it. I got stoned and I missed it. I got stoned, oh me, oh my. It took 7 months of your gym just to get that local virgin with the sweet face up to my place to fool around a bit. Next day she woke up rosy and she snuggled up so cozy. When she asked me how I liked it, Lord, it hurts me to admit I was stoned. I'm making no excuses for the many things I uses just to sweeten up my relationships and brighten up my day. When my earthly race is over and I'm ready for the clover and they ask me how my life has been, I guess I'll have to say I was stoned. And poem.
Oh, man. Great. Great, great read there, Rex. You know, this one cracked me up. It's such a great reminder that, you know, because, you know, people always think of Shel Silverstein as writing poetry just for children. But he actually did write quite a bit of adult humor. And this definitely shows another side of him that people don't necessarily always know. And you did an excellent read of that, you know, really getting into it. And, you know, it's fun. It really fit the topic. It's fun. I really like, it took 7 months of Urgin just to get that local virgin with the sweet face up to my place to fool around a bit. And all the way through, I'm making no excuses for the many things I use as just to sweeten up my relationship and brighten up my day. Very cool. All right, and
well, let's kick it into
up next. Going. Oh, what's that?
Let's step into what we got going.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. All right. Up next we have Addicted to the Addiction by Jenny the Deep. Drugs, rock and roll, strumming guitar, strung out and out of control. To this day I have done it all. Been there, done that, almost didn't come back from a great fall. Snorted rock and smoked marijuana. Always a rock star, but now just smoke the ganja. Addicted to the rush of being high. Always will I remember what addiction is like. I thought drugs and alcohol were my friends. Really, they pushed me and nearly caused my end. Yes, the high makes me sweat, makes me groove, but are they really worth the stains of puke? Once an addict, always an addict. No longer do I let the snake bite my skin. But weed does keep me feel all mellow yellow. Anymore, that's good enough for this old fellow. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Jenny digs into the good things. I mean, had that come back from a great fall, snorted rock and smoked marijuana, almost a rock star. But now just smoke ganja. I like that thought. Addicted to the rush of being high, always will I remember what addiction is like. There's that note, once you're an addict, you're always an addict, and you can fall just as easily if you pick up that needle once again. And that's where a lot of that hits on, because she rolls into that the stains of puke and a snake bite my skin. There's a nice touch with that one, the snake bite into the veins itself. I like the back end hitting that. They call me mellow yellow, but weed just keep me feel all mellow yellow anymore. That's good enough for this old fellow. And there's a nice touch to hey, you know what? When you've done it all, some things you still go back to, and you bowl out all the rest because you know where it got you, and it's a little bit late in life to take up that habit once more, because it'll usually lead to a nice coffin because you've done the damage to your body already with all the vein shots and all the other hard stuff that walks in that realm. But yeah, he did live it like a rock star and he did it hard. A lot of the boys in the old days, I remember Eric Clapton was so stoned one night with Cream, he played an entire show on his back in the Royal Albert Hall.
Oh my goodness. That is for Jim Stone. Wow. That does not surprise me. Nope. But yeah, great comment there, Rex. But yeah, this was definitely a great write on the lifestyle of you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The lines were hard hitting. The imagery was visceral. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the line, "I let the snake bite my skin," is the Godsmack reference she's referring to with the song Voodoo. And I thought that was really cool. Another part that really worked well for me, it makes me slightly queasy because there's something about the word puke, you know, even just thinking about it just makes me queasy, but it works so well for this poem and for the message it's getting across. Because as you were saying, you know, you live that kind of lifestyle, you try everything, you realize what just doesn't work. And you know, the waking up with those puke stains, it was just all a part of the consequences of choosing that kind of lifestyle where you experimented with everything and anything. So great write and very well done.
Well, that's usually the reference point to heroin. Once you shut up and you start getting in, all of a sudden it's either puke or shit. You're doing one or the other.
Oh, geez. Wow, glad I never did any of that shit. Man, bad stuff, I tell you. But, wow, cool writing there, Jenny. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
What we got next?
All right, up next we have Wasted by Mystic Muse. And go ahead, Rex.
Wasted by Mystic Muse. I thought I wasn't wasted, but I was. I'm sure I broke a half a dozen laws. I thought I had the skill to clearly think, but lost it once I had my seventh drink. I swore I wasn't drunk, but I was sauced. My bathroom is the scene of cookies tossed. They said that I sang Freebird at the bar and tried to drive a total stranger's car. I said I wasn't cross. I was mistaken. Upon my neighbor's lawn, I would awaken. It's then I knew I was a sotted mess. I woke up in a thong and wedding dress. Well, now I know it's best if I don't drink. I'm sure that I went potty in the sink. This headache that I've got has made it plain. The next time friends get drunk, I should end poem.
Oh, man. Great read there, Rex. I told Dave in my comment, I laughed and I said, when you wake up in a thong and wedding dress, it's definitely time to get on the wagon. You know, this was a great take on the chosen prompt. As always, spot on with the rhyme and flow. I did like that ending, but I also there was so much that I really liked about this. I mean, I think he was spot on capturing that life where you realize that you're hanging out with the wrong kind of friends, and it's time to give up the drinking and possibly give up the friends. I really liked they said that I sang Freebird at the bar and tried to drive a total stranger's car. I said I wasn't crocked, I was mistaken. Upon my neighbor's lawn, I would awaken. It's then I knew I was a sodded mess. I woke up in a thong and wedding dress. You know, great fun, right? Clever lines. And I tell you, yeah, karaoke. As soon as you find yourself singing karaoke, you know you've had plenty, at least me. But, you know, I don't know about anybody else. But, yeah, great, right? Fun stuff and very well done.
That line, I'm sure that I went potty in the sink, had me think it was someone was commenting on the brass toilet or the golden toilet that they had in their house. And they said, we don't have a golden toilet. That's a euphonium. I knew an old bartender way back in the day who would piss in the sink in the bar when he had to at the end of the night. Because you can run out to the bathroom. So he just pissed in the sink. So that brings back, and he was an old New York bartender, so yeah, some things just never change. But I did like that thought, a song and a wedding dress. Now the question is, What brought on the thong and the wedding dress? And whom did you marry in the moment? Those are the real questions. And did you give up your virginity as well? Which brings a whole lot of other images. Like, hey, did you check that thong for some kick and yell and gel emissions?
I think poor Dave woke up next to his husband, Bubba.
And you wake up and there's a five gallon jar of kick and yell gel on the counter, and he's, oh shit. And the grease rim is slightly making itself known as you go to the bathroom. And it's not just the normal, it's the squirts.
Oh my gosh. Too funny. Too funny.
I like this game. This is cool. Funny.
It is. I have to agree with you.
I ought to watch what I drink because there are some things I can't remember and there are some things I really don't want to remember.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep, that's for sure.
Where do we go next?
Up next, we have Dying Lips by Mermaid, and this is also a collaboration that she wrote with Nighthawk Breast, and it goes like this: striking shiver cavorting down my spine, the look of longing from my liver is a sign that my dearth of joy and solace of addiction is erstwhile entwined. The arrow tip enters with valediction verve, spreading turrets through nerve endings as heartbeats junk jerk, clutching at bubbled breath, quivering under confines. And yet, hospital beds sink solid under floorboards of carved cravings, pillow propped, visitation prompted, sipping on tepid warm drinks to wet, dying lips, until alarm clock and the dawn ushers itself into an action start and repeat, hair of the dog, iced drink clink, alone down alleys of secrecy and poem.
Gregory Penn, and Mermaid went with, Yes, I've Been Trepanned. That's quite an interesting experience, especially for my brain surgeon, who saw my thoughts flying around in my brain. And that's a little bit different. I like the angle with the clawfoot bathtub right there, and that offers up another note, maybe the idea of ice baths to cool down the overheatedness. But what she drops in the look of longing from my liver is a sign that my dearth of joy and solace addiction is erstwhile entwined. Oof. And the arrow tip ends with valediction verb, spreading turrets through nerve endings as heartbeats jump jerk, clutching at bubbled breaths, quivering under confines. It's actually quite the voice walking into the sort of drowning in, using that bathtub to see it as a note of drowning within the what's being done. And then a hospital bed sinks sullied. Yeah, there's a little bit of useful knowledge there. Under floorboards of carved cravings, tepid warm drinks to wet, dying lips. Oof, it does get a nice little bit of purple and thought right there. And the alarm clock clocks blink bleeps, and the dawn ushers itself in. The repeat, like it's almost like a wash and rinse routine of going through the same thing day after day because your world is turned into this nightmare. And when it comes to the trepanning angle and having your brain opened up and maybe twiddled with, so to speak, in order to deliver expectations on the idea of what can and cannot be done medically to people who walk this vein, so to speak. All right. What about you?
Oh, absolutely. I like what you had to say there. That's a very thoughtful comment. I thought this was a wonderful collaboration. I really enjoy and appreciate how their words flowed together. That had strong imagery and metaphors. It was really quite brilliant on how it speaks on the high on addiction, on the high and the crash and burn, and then the feeling of you know, being alone and feeling lost and feeling like, you know, you have to keep everything a secret. I really liked that they used the phrase strike nine shiver, strike nine being something that's used in like rat poison and is used for killing, you know, mice and rats and can be deadly to humans, but is oftentimes used in small doses as an upper, you know, to get high.
Yep.
And I thought that was a great word choice because of the fact that it's both used as an upper and a poison. It kind of makes me think of the quote I read, which I can't remember who said it, but it was a quote I used in a contest that the difference between medicine and poison is the amount given. And this has great lines all the way through, and you can see the process, how it becomes this dearth of joy, and then the all of a sudden the quivering, the bubbled breath, the heartbeat junk jerk. I thought, you know, all of those were great lines to describe the process of overdosing, you know, and great lines all the way through and very well done.
Where are we going next?
All right. And up next we have Having Just a Few by Duke of STP, Dex Bailey. And go ahead, Rex.
Having Just a Few by Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey. I like to go out for a few. No sense in saying a number. Counting can be restrictive. Leads to an end looming near. Pray for a few more. Nothing was set in stone. Free in the moment. Sweet talking away any guilt. Guess I had a few too many. Don't even know how. One thing you can always count on. Shots of tequila catching up. And pump. All right, we're good.
Oh, great read there, Rex. I'm glad that Dex was inspired. I told him I thought this had awesome humor, and I said to him that some of my best stories happened with tequila. Unfortunately, I can't remember them. You know, this was a great brevity. It was fun. It was relatable. I particularly, my favorite parts were no sense in saying, I like to go out for a few, no sense in saying a number. Counting can be restrictive. And then, of course, the ending. One thing you can always count on, shots of tequila catching up. I tell you, shots of anything eventually catch up, but tequila for some reason, yeah, that shit hits hard. So, yep, great writing and very well done.
Well, you know why they tell you to salt and lemon, don't you?
No, why do they do that?
Well, it's to kill the taste and the heat going down, so you can actually swallow it. But it's also to mask the fact that everything the Mexicans ship up here in the way of tequila is pure garbage because they won't drink it themselves. They won't drink Cuervo. They won't drink the bottom of the barrel stuff. But if you talk to a real Mexican when it comes to a tequila, Jimador is it, and it's actually really good. You don't need salt. You don't need lemon. You don't need lime. It's a shot you can take, which goes down very easily. And it doesn't give you all those extra side effects like dancing on tables, ripping your clothes off, or just being stupid in the moment.
Ah, well, I will actually have to try this stuff. Now, I remember you helped me choose which tequila to buy my daughter for her 21st birthday. So, yeah, I do know there is good stuff out there. I will have to try it myself sometime. But darn it, I won't have any excuse for, like, jumping on the tables and dancing naked, Rex. You just ruined my nightly plan.
Himidor is the the least, well, there's a lot of great tequila out there, but it's all really expensive when you want to get into the good stuff. The Himidor is the stuff that the average person can enjoy without having to spend $40, $50, $60 for a bottle of the good stuff. And it walks
right
in parallel.
Huh. Yeah, I will have to check that out sometime. You know, definitely. Funny thing is even I did drink, obviously, that cheap stuff, that Jose Cuervo, but I never did do the lime and or lemon and salt or lime and salt. I always just shot it down straight. So I'm sure the other stuff would go down like water. So. But, yeah, great writing by Dexter.
That's why they call some of it eau de vie, water of life, while others eau de morte.
Wow. That's a good word for it. That is a good word for it. Yeah. All right. I'm holding off on hats, right, because I know she's stuck in traffic right now, and I want to make sure she gets to work. Yeah. What was that, Rex?
Probably about another 30 minutes.
Yeah. So she's stuck in traffic, and, you know, hopefully she'll be listening soon, and in the meantime, I'm got another right to put up, so.
Oh, there you go. Today's mm-hmm. morning traffic sucks. Well,
yep.
We're going to wait for you, don't worry.
Yep, we got Jenny hanging on the board, we got Haps hanging on the board and stuck in traffic and giving us the morning report from, where is she from again, Slovakia? I think.
Yes.
The morning traffic report from Slovakia by Hat. Today's morning traffic sucks. There you go. So. All right. Well, now it's time to get high in handcuffs. And this is High in Handcuffs by Betty Page. Chain me up, wicked. Viciously seduce me, sweet. Luxuriously. He's got me so high, I'm in handcuffs, arrested, prisoner of love. I'm on ecstasy, making out with my girlfriends, rolling with the stones, diamond cut snow white, numbs my mind, oblivious, seduced in my cage. Swinging golden rose, Moulin Rouge erotica, dangles chandeliers. He strums his guitar, master of pulling those strings. Flowers surround him. Love, sex, dark magic, daisy chains, vivid orgies, rock and roll lifestyle, red hot laser beams bouncing round our hotel room, hanging with Keith Moon. Sounds of smashing glass, everyone's high on acid, LSD daydreams, up against the walls, cameras flash for the press, Keith Richards undressed. Dancing with three girls, Mick Jagger's all tied up now, getting all plastered. Fine sculptures are made, sipping champagne in the shade, wearing sunglasses. Invasion began, sitting in the backs of cars, high, naked, handcuffed. End poem.
Great read, Pam. This reminds me of We're an American Band by Grand Funk Railroad. It tells a story of it's about one particular girl, but everything that was gotten into around Out on the Road for 40 Days, Last Night in Little Rock, Purple Haze, sweet, sweet Connie turned her at. She's a natural, that's a natural fact. And it goes through the whole thing of the wild party, the after the show thing, the champagne, the drugs, the tearing up the hotel rooms, just getting into well, like you hear, daisy chain, vivid orgies, rock and roll lifestyle, hanging with Keith Moon, LSD, daydreams, Keith Richards undressed, Mick Jagger. So it does hit on those party scenes in the hotel rooms and back, well, starting at backstage and then moving on to the hotel rooms afterwards. So it gives birth to that notion of the, what do they call them, the girls who followed
groupies?
The band. Yeah, the
groupies.
There were some normal groupies in each town, but there were some who were actually groupies. They were on the planes. They did the travel with the bands, and they were like the permanent resident groupies. And they'd pick up a few more hanger-ons along the way. So this walks that very same angle of the groupie lifestyle. Nicely done, Betty. All right. You got to read it.
Yes, it was fun to read. As always, Betty has great 575 lines. I told her I think I got a contact high just from reading this poem. You know, I liked your observations, and I have to agree with you that it definitely does speak on that groupie lifestyle, that rock and roll, party hard, hang out with the band lifestyle. And she really did not hold back in this one. Any kind of type of sensual drug, music, indulgent you could think of, she has managed to put into this poem. I really like I'm on ecstasy, making out with my girlfriends, rolling with the Stones, at swinging golden rose, Moulin Rouge erotica, dangles chandeliers. And then sounds of smashing glass, everyone's high on acid, LSD daydreams, up against the walls, camera flash of the press, Keith Richards undressed. I feel like that, you know, there's kind of not only that idea of the fun that happens, but the kind of the not so fun parts, you know, the cameras flashing in your face. You know, the sound, I feel like the sound of the crashing glass, sound of smashing glasses, really she takes in the whole effect, the positive and negative of the lifestyle. And Invasion Begins, and I feel like Invasion Begins is a nod towards the British invasion of music. Back in, was it 1960s with the Beatles and the Stones? But it also speaks on the idea of the paparazzi getting like right up in their faces. At least to me, that's what it speaks on. So that was a clever write and very well done.
And that was what Sweet Connie or Sweet Sweet Connie was. Connie Hamsey out of Arkansas. She was the groupie back in those days.
Huh. Wow.
And
wow.
She also claims she got propositioned by Bill Clinton, who was then governor of Arkansas. Why
oh
not?
Oh, my God.
He had plenty of kids going all over the place every day.
Right? Oh, my gosh. So true. That is funny. All right, let's see here. Grabbing the next right, and we have, you were only happy losing yourself in the dive bar you called. I'm sorry, let me try this again. You were only happy losing yourself in the dive bar you called therapy by Bearheart. And go ahead, Rex.
You're only happy losing yourself in a dive bar you call therapy by Braveheart. The dark worn wood of the counter welcomed a space for all lonely minds who had found their way inside. Don Julio provided the answers in a double shot glass, clenched by a silver sliver of a lime that was as sour as the look in his eyes. It was a promise in a glass, made to strip all the inner noise long before the tongue tasted its healing. Fingers reaching for freedom in a temporary self that seemed to be as fleeting as the clarity of the moon in the snowy sky. Lips mouthing the lyrics of a distant song that triggers glory days and love, bringing upturn to a plastic smile. Gladly sliding into the altered self, one could almost be deceived that his laughter was real. End poem. And Bear took, I never thought I was wasted, but I probably was. All right, what do you think?
I like this one. This is a new name to me, so I'm glad to see a new name. And I hope that they are inspired to write for more of our contests and more of our shows, because I was really impressed with this write. I like the straightforward style and her choice of language and imagery. I like how, first of all, great title. You know, I like a title that is as poetic as the poem itself. What particularly drew my attention about this write is that she makes the dive bar as much of a character as a person. You know, she gives it life. She gives it personality. She reminds us. They remind us that oftentimes it's those dive bars with their tequila and their smoke that are that refuge, that home for the lonely and the broken who don't have anywhere else to go. I really like, it was a promise in a glass made to strip all the inner noise long before the tongue tasted its healing. You know, it's like that idea of just getting to that first sip and knowing that you're just moments away from complete oblivion from life. Problems, fingers reaching for freedom in a temporary self that seemed to be as fleeting as the clarity of the moon in the snowy sky. You know, and then I think is part of the addiction of drugs and alcohol, you know, and sadly so, is the fact that we are trying to find ways to escape life's problems, trying to find ways to escape reality. I like gladly sliding into the alter self. One could almost be deceived that his laughter was real. And that is such a hard-hitting and sad ending, you know, to be so unhappy with yourself that you have to create a new personality with alcohol. So just a very poignant write, and I'm looking forward to reading more of them. I did notice that this prompt, I never thought I was wasted, but probably was actually the most chosen one in the contest. Well, this excellent write.
This could be, she does offer a note of a dive bar, but I think it goes a little deeper than that, because it offers up that barfly motif, but it isn't actually a barfly, because you start out with the dark, worn wood of the counter, welcomed a space for all lonely minds who had found their way inside. That offers up a not the dive bar motif, so to speak, but that place in town where you can actually almost melt into the place, because it hallows all the other like-minded souls, and this doesn't call forth those young and middle. This hits me as one who is older, because he's hitting on Don Julio, for one thing. That's a little bit more expensive tequila and a double shot glass with a sliver of lime. It was a promise in a glass. This hits on someone who's lived a life. They're lonely. They've got no one, not a whole lot of anything else except the next drink, because they're worn out. They're on the back end of life, and this is where they can wash away those regrets and those used to have but no longer have ideas that kind of itch the back of the mind and bother them. This way, lips, mouth, and lyrics of the distant songs, we've got a jukebox that's playing in the background that triggers glory days and love, bringing upturn to a plastic smile. There's an easing. It takes you back to an arena where you once felt whole, whereas you're not here in this particular space because you don't have anything of that sort these days. And then gladly sliding into the altar self, one could almost be deceived that his laughter was real, the laughter being that false note of memory to a happier time that you can laugh about, or a joke that was told that you're now remembering and you still find it funny, even though it's probably 40 years old and no longer holds any relevance to anybody except yourself. So the therapy is sliding into an easier time when things actually offered up brighter than what is now being alluded to.
Exactly. I always do that myself. I am always making dated jokes that my teenager just thinks I'm horrible and doesn't even get. So I'm left, standing in the kitchen laughing for myself while she rolls her eyes. But I liked your observations there. Very cool. I can definitely see that. Like you mentioned, that tequila is a more expensive brand. And it's that idea of looking back with regret. I can see that. Definitely. Awesome. Awesome observations there. I tell you, Rex, you're definitely, not a lot of rights in the contest, but top-notch quality, top-shelf product as far as the poems in this contest go.
All right, what's your next?
All right, well, let's see here. That is a good question. All right. Up next, we have The Man Is the Man Is the Man by Julie Buck. The man is the man is the man, yet I've been here way before God, and I'll always promote using 2 feet when doing any kicking, just not 2 at the same time. And I've only recently learned that the plan is the plan is the plan. Yet don't you find it a bit odd that we're all still refusing to do any wound licking, provided we expose governmental slime? And fuck, I've always known that. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. I like that opening, using both feet to do the kicking. Just not 2 at the same time. Yeah, because that means you'll end up in your ass. The idea is you got to kick somebody when they're down, and you got to kick them 1 foot at a time using both feet. That way you can rest one just in case you stub your toe. And the thought of, I've only recently learned that. Then the plan is the plan is the plan. You don't find it a bit odd that we're still refusing to do any wound licking, provided we expose governmental slime. Again, it takes a licking but keeps on ticking. You ain't doing enough.
Amen to that. That is so true. That is so true. Great comment there, Rex. I thought the same thing. I told her that she echoed what were my thoughts exactly with that first stanza. And it cracked me up, if you use both feet at the same time, you'd fall on your ass. I thought this was a great brevity all the way through. I really liked that beginning, and I liked where she says, the man is the man is the man, yet I've been here way before God. I feel like the line, I've been here way before God, is a nod to the Rolling Stones song Sympathy for the Devil, because it has that vibe to me. And I also really like the phrase, provided we expose governmental slime, and fuck, I've always known that. And I like that, and fuck, I've always known that. Great use of an explicitive, you know, that F-bomb right in the right place to emphasize the point. And you know how I really like how this speaks on the idea of we just keep going around licking our wounds. But, you know, we need to expose the slime that is out there. So very clever, right? Strong voice, raw, gritty, and just, yeah, I really liked this. Very well done.
All right, where are we going next?
All right. Well, let's see here. I think next we have grabbing the next one and jumping around. Yay, Hats has reached the office. All right. Hello, Hats. And up next we have Addicted to Stupid by Lawrence 67.
Okay. Ah, there it is. Addicted to Stupid by Lawrence 67. The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie Alfie in Stupid Palm Reader. Okay, who's next? Step right up. No pushing, no pushing. Everyone will get red. Hey, Nigel, what are you doing? Hey, Alfie. Look, I'm pretending to read these humans' palms. I'm a stupid palm reader. Who's next? Do you have the $20 fee? Yes? Okay, you're stupid. Who's next? Step up. No pushing. No pushing. End poem.
great read, Rex. I always do enjoy the adventures of Nigel and Alfie, and I especially like it when they mock the stupidity of humans, you know, and I've only been to a palm reader once in my life, and I knew she was full of bullshit when she said she saw me becoming a doctor. Thankfully, I only paid $5 and not $20. But, you know, I like, of course, as always, his sense of humor. The interaction between Nigel and Alfie, it always seems like one of them is doing something, you know, like Nigel will be getting something like, you know, shouting out, no pushing, no pushing. And then the other one has a question like, hey, what's going on? And this is great all the way through, but I do have to say that my absolute favorite part, because I just really think it's spot on for mocking stupid people, is, do you have the $20 fee? Yes? Okay, you're stupid. Who's next? great lines and very well done.
Yep, it does fit on that idea. I mean, you look at palm readers, they do offer up a little bit because you got to know about the lines on the hand, the palms themselves, which they do draw on. But what you don't notice is they don't really look at your palms once they've taken a first look. They start babbling their mumbo jumbo. They're looking you in the face, and they're watching the little ticks, the little eyebrow raise, the little furrow, all the facial expressions which tell them which thought they offer up next to drive the point home that, yes, they know what they're talking about. So the idea was Nigel's a cat. So you let a cat read your palms, which offers up the ease of notion there. At $20 a read, yeah, you're bloody stupid. Next.
Yep. It's kind of like that. Do you remember that show, The Mentalist?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like that. That's a good show. But, yep. it makes me think of that. Or there was another one that was similar to that, but a little more like funny. It was Psych. That was another one.
What's funny, because if I remember, before he went into helping out cops as a mentalist, he was a, what you would call one of those Bible-thumping tent preachers who shimmied and shaked the money out of everybody's pocket and made himself rich.
Yep. Yeah, he was either that or he was some sort of con man. I don't remember specifically, but yeah, he definitely wasn't on the up and honest, that's for sure. But, yep. Sadly.
Where are we going?
All right. Well, up next, we have The Air That I Breathe by Weaver of Dreams. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So let me go ahead and find that. And here we go.
You could not call this an addiction, simply because I won't stop using it. I mean, it's air, mate. It can't be harnessed willy-nilly. It was free, and now you've suddenly decided to limit it. Next, it'll be free speech. So I'm taking mine and banking it against lean times to come. Of course not under my bed. Right, I'll have to think of a new place. Drat. Saunters off casually, stage left, whistling.
Great read, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. And Pam?
I did enjoy this one. First of all, as always, she does a wonderful performance read. I liked the whistling at the end. There was plenty of bite with this one. I thought it was thoughtful and entertaining with lines that hit hard. I like how it speaks on two different ideas for me. The first idea being the idea of basic rights being taken away. The other idea I had, and this came through especially with the end line, was it was about paranoia of everything that you have being taken away. I liked the humor of this, and I do think it touches on a serious subject, but in a way that, humorous. I really like that where she uses the phrase willy-nilly. It can't be harnessed willy-nilly. It was free, and now you suddenly decide to limit it. Next, it'll be free speech. So I'm taking mine and banking it against lean times to come. Of course, not under my bed. And the wordplay when she says younger than springtime with J-U-N-G-E-R, Carl Jung, the psychiatrist. I thought that was quite clever wordplay. And since one of the subjects that Carl Jung oftentimes discussed and had an impact on was the subject of paranoid behavior in human psychology, that's where, for me, the idea of the paranoia came through. But really quite a clever write and very well done.
That's true, but he didn't delve deep enough into paranoia, because there is always a baseline that derives from paranoia, and that baseline usually holds a lot of truth, whether the it's offset in the moment or driven to the point of excess paranoia is something else he might have delved into. But the idea of addiction, limiting air, and that was it was free, and now you suddenly decide to limit it. That's true. By masking people, you limit their air. And these people think so little of us, they don't care if we die. We already knew 100 years ago that masks don't work when it comes to pandemics. That was writ upon back in 1920 and proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, and they all knew it, Even the ones who lied to us about the mask will work. All you have to do is wear the mask and you pretend. No, all you did was kill people off blindly. And next it'll be free speech. Well, by wearing the mask, you are giving up free speech because no one gets to see your mouth. The next generation of kids in school who don't go to school who do go to school and are wearing masks don't get to see facial expression, don't get to know how things work. They lose temperance within their schooling. And, of course, not under my bed. The idea is you don't hide anything under your bed because someone's always going to find it and take it away. And the new place, the sources off casually stage left kind of hints at that idea of, going quietly into that good night, so to speak. Because if you don't stand up now, you will always be going quietly into that good night because the erosion is on and they make no bones right now about telling you exactly what they're doing. They're admitting to it, something we've known for 10 years. They're admitting to it now. Just like Australia's already banned AstraZeneca over there because of what it's doing. England has two huge lawsuits going against the medical companies for all the side effects and all the deaths that they've caused. And I think that's only the beginning right there. It's going to work its way around the world. And some of these large companies who did this shit are going to find themselves on the back end of a lot of nastiness.
And
Amen then
to
the
that.
Other ones with them.
Amen to that. It makes me think of, what did I read? Something the other day it said, it was a joke that said, what's the difference between a conspiracy theory and the news? About 3 months.
Actually,
and,
that used to be true. Then it worked itself to Dan Bongino. Gino said it was. Apply the Bongino rule, 3 days. Now it's being dispersed within hours of its release.
Yep, exactly.
And the funny thing is, conspiracy theory, I look at that as the biggest oxymoron and most used oxymoron of all time. Because not all conspiracies are born of theory, and not all theories are born of conspiracy. It's a load of shit.
That is very true. That is a really good point there, Rex. Yep, really good point. Well, before I comment, I would actually like to welcome Gray I. Smith to the show. Welcome, Gray. Glad you could join us.
Hey, Pam. Hi, Rex.
Hey, Gray. Round two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Busy night tonight, but of course you had to join me and Rex because you knew we were getting rolling stoned.
Yeah, no kidding.
So... yeah, very cool, very cool. Thank you for calling in. I already commented on Weaver's poem, didn't I? Yes, I did. I forgot about that. All right, well, I guess then we should have Gray comment if he read it.
No,
absolutely.
I haven't, sorry.
Well, that's fine.
Oh,
we can
no
move
problem.
Into the next one.
That's right. That's right. All right. And now that we know Hats is able to tune in and listen and isn't trapped in traffic, I'll go ahead and put her poem up, which is A Call for Defenstration by Hats. And Gray, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. You got just 1 second. A Call for Defenestration. Gentlemen above, your assholes. I write this. Will you read it with understanding? No metaphors. This is raw. Piss on you. On all who are drunk with power to rule over our lives. You spread speech, this war should end, yet you bring more guns and tanks, more soldiers, spoiling our land. Why the hell don't you call for peace? Your thirst for blood left mothers in despair. Look down into the children's eyes, half orphans whose fathers were called for fight. My grandfather fought in World War II, told bloody stories with wet eyes. Oh, merciful death that took him years ago. He doesn't see what we have done with this peace his friends fought for with him. They didn't return. He dug frozen soil, burned his friends. Their glassy gaze stared into sky. Dig and bury, whisper short prayer, run and hide. Airplane scans the surface. Machine gun plows the soil with cartridges. Blood roars in my ears. Even I'm a pacifist. I scream, lungs out, defenestration. All of you in black or blue suits and white shirts, my only gun, my words. End poem.
Great read there, Gray. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Oh, I liked this one. First of all, great read there, Gray. I really like how you got into shouting the word defenestration. I'm also very thankful to have, not that I couldn't have looked it up myself, but I like that she put the Wikipedia link to the explanation of the word defenestration, which is the act of throwing someone or something out of a window, which I think is really cool that there's actually a word for that term, because I would have just always called it throwing somebody or something out of a window. I thought that was really cool. I learned a new word, learned a little bit of history. So that was awesome. I really liked the bite in this. I told her in my comment, I felt that she really brought the claws and the teeth with this one. It had a lot of bite that she definitely left people bruised and bleeding, strong imagery. I like how this speaks on no longer being willing to put up with people's bullshit or their excuses. It has a whole power to the people type feel to it. I really like the line, gentlemen above your assholes. I write this. Will you read with understanding, no metaphors? This is a raw piss. This is raw piss on you. On all who are drunk with power to rule over our lives. This speaks on the idea of the very wealthy, the elitist standing on the back and crushing the spines of the average man, woman, and child. I also like where it says, oh, merciful death that took him years ago. He doesn't see what have we done with this peace. It is such a shame that those who fought for, you know, our rights and our freedoms and our peace see the world is becoming, you know. So just powerful lines all the way through and spot on after midnight, right?
Thank you, Pam. And Greg, you got Serena. How about you?
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, you know, it's in your face, it's raw, it's real, you know, it speaks to the truth at the heart of the matter, and I thought she really was on point with her right, so fantastic job.
Absolutely. Now, I've always used the word fenestra. I like it. It does mean windows, usually small windows in Italian buildings that open out onto a garden or out in the kitchen window where you can get the small breezes of warmth and aromatics that fold in. I use it to look at as a thought to eyes, the fenestra. I do like the thought with defenestration, that throwing something out of those windows, just like throwing out something through your eyes, the voice, the verb that you and the zeal that you offer in this, your assholes. And the thought, this is raw piss on you, another nice chunk, on all who are drunk with power to rule our lives. And that is exactly what it is. There is a note going on now of totalitarianism is what everybody who has power wants to illustrate and put forth once more. Going back in time to feudalism, they want total control over our lives. And if that means shoving everybody they can into that war machine, they will, because if there's less men around, then they have less trouble in their own countries when they want to put their foot down and kill off what little rights are left for the people. And that's always been a note to power. And the thought of stripping countries. It isn't just those who go in to fight to strip the countries. It's those who are in power in those countries who are stripping away what's going on monetarily within that country. I mean, you look at Zelensky's chief ministers. His wife got caught leaving Ukraine with $26 million in her suitcases. Yeah, where did all that money come from? Nice. For the people, I doubt it. For her, definitely. The idea of keeping us locked down is just that. The thought of World War II was supposed to be at the ultimate in freedom, getting rid of that evil that was walking its way across the world in all manner of nastiness from the Nazis were doing with the Jews and other peoples to what the Japanese were doing to the Chinese at the time with their experimentation. Yet, we're still walking in that realm because experimentation going on now than ever before. Not to mention the sort of there's more slaves today than there has ever been in human history. So let's throw them all out the fucking windows. Let's make sure they never worm their way back into. If they offer up words that you can hold on to and they run the governments that way, then they're worth putting in power. If they're not, get them the hell out. Or up here.
All right. Great comment there, Rex. All right. And up next we have A Life Without Sound by Babbler. And go ahead, Rex.
Okay, okay. Let's see. A Life Without Sound by Babbler. His nose is a cabin for powders of all kinds, boogers and sugars and eight balls and dimes, sucking and blowing, geometry and lines, anything could take, he'd take to feel fine, skinny dipping at hotels, burning out tires, streaking in skate parks, his brain is haywired, climbing a mountain that has run that has no way down, running on empty, so lost he's been found, a statistic, a number, a body in the crowd, a mother in black. The wailing is loud. I wear black slacks and sit at my desk. 20 years later, wondering what's next. Dual screen monitors, drowning in text. An album with no photos, a life undersexed. Slowly walking a path more direct, level and even to the same final rest. A statistic, a number, a dwindling crowd, a face with no wrinkles, a life without sound. And poem. Okay, you got that one first.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. This another one with hard-hitting lines, great rhyme. I really liked this one, separated into the two parts. And the first part being the person that really lived life on the edge, you know, anything they could do to get high. And then the second, the person who, you know, sits behind their desk. And, you know, I kind of went back and forth whether it was the same person, which it could easily be, or if it was two separate people. But either way, I think the message is the same. And to me, the message that I got from this, the idea that I got this from this was that one way or another, we are all killing ourselves. Sometimes the process just goes a little faster. And Keith Richards, you know, in case the process is going very, very slow. You know, great lines in, you know, where she says, I'm getting, his nose is a cavern for powders of all kinds, boogers and sugars and eight balls and dimes, sucking and blowing geometry and lines. Anything he could take, he'd take to feel fine. You know, I feel like that honest to goodness feels like, you know, Dr. Seuss was snorting lines of cocaine before writing a poem. And then the second part with the, I wear black slacks and sit at my desk 20 years later wondering what's next, dual screen monitors drowning in text. And so here's a person who's living a very straight life. They're not doing any drugs. They're not doing any drinking, you know, but they're slowly killing themselves with the stress of, you know, having that, you know, 60-hour-a-week job behind the desk, never living life, just always living up to other people's expectation. An album with no photos, a life under sex, slowly walking a path more direct. You know, and so, yeah, they're not killing themselves with drugs, but they are killing themselves by not ever actually having lived life. So a great, great, awesome poem and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Gray, how about you?
Yeah, he did an excellent job of reading it. And I really like the poem. You know, it really makes you wonder whether or not that it is the same person living two separate lives at a certain point, switching the switch off from addiction to living a normal life and dying slowly doing it. So it really makes you ponder about that. But it was very well written.
Absolutely. Pam's thoughts work well, but it's the back end of both that hit on the same thing. A statistic, a number, a body in the crowd. A statistic, a number, a dwindling crowd. That there's a note coming up over the next 5 years, 20% of the world's population will be out of jobs because computers will be doing it. And what comes next? What happens to 20% of people? Yeah, 20% of people. You're looking at a billion and a half people with no work and no training and no prospects. So it all works the same thing, a statistic, a number, a body in the crowd, a statistic, a number, a dwindling crowd. The idea of what those who hold the real power above the ones who supposedly hold power, they want a dwindling population because they think the world is theirs. They're the ones that should own the skies, own the seas, own everything while having us do the dirty work for them so that they can enjoy the pleasures that we're not supposed to have. Nicely done, Babla. Thank you very much. All right. Coming to you.
All right. Well, up next, I'm going to put up my poem, which is called Haircuts and Running with Scissors. And it goes like this. I'm going to be a grumpy old lady with a Keith Richards haircut and a fuck authority attitude. I'll stop dyeing my hair blood moon red or whatever shade suits me in the moment. Just let every strand of gray peek out in wide-eyed amazement at a world that they were hidden from. I won't even try to tame the way my hair gets frizzy when the humidity skyrockets or keep my cussing in check. I'll tell everyone who suggests I style my hair into a helmet bouffant that they can kiss my fucking ass. I'll wear stretchy polyester pants and paisley prints with pockets for butterscotch candy that I'll refuse to share. I'll sport silk bandanas decorated with Picasso and Monet art. I'll sing Black Sabbath and Nirvana song that I've long forgotten the lyrics to. When I end up in a nursing home and someone tells me it's time to take a nap, I'm going to flip them the bird double time, tell them I'm not tired, even though I am, and I'll drag my fingers like wild horses through my Papa Was a Rolling Stone hair and demand that some dumbass bring me some edibles and turn up the volume, because I'm only willing to participate in bingo night if I'm high as a kite and the music is screaming chords that light the fire in my disconnected focus of Mad Libs and highways. And just like Mr. Richards, I'll cut my own hair and run with the scissors. End poem.
Gregory Pam, thank you very much. And Gray, why don't you kick us off?
You know, I really love that poem. It really has powerful imagery. You know, you can feel your emotions as you stand there proud and defiant, you know, flipping on the double, the bird on the double. And I really enjoyed it. This was totally fun and powerful, right? It captured the essence of the whole Rolling Stones things quite beautifully, I thought. So great job.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm trying to get a head start on being a grumpy old lady, so I figured I'd put it down in poetry.
That's a life force on your back to reckon with, for sure.
There you go. There you go.
Well, you fit that with the right, but that second stanza bothers me. I'll stop dyeing my hair blood moon red or whatever shade suits me in the moment. Why? Because every time I see one of these woke fools today with the colored hair, and they're going, and I picture that in the moment, like you're running loose through this bloody thing. So I don't know if that's the tale from beyond or the thing that lies dormant at the bottom of the ocean floor. Whichever one, I think you're going to fuck everybody up, and nobody's going to like you, because I'm burning down the house, and y'all are going to be inside it.
Yep.
Guys, I thought you were allergic to edible.
Well, by the time I'm an old grumpy old lady, I'll have forgotten that. Oh, God. You know what? Actually, I tried edibles a second. You know what? I think it was honestly the one.
If you're allergic to edibles, have them. They'll put you to sleep.
Yeah, right? Oh, man. And did I ever tell you, Gray, about my allergic reaction to some edibles?
No.
Oh, good Lord. So my son, my son who's like 20, had given me a couple of edibles, and I tried them. It was my first time trying them. I broke out in a rash on my legs and my arms, and the worst part, I broke out in a rash on my ass, and it hurt.
Oh, no.
Sick.
Oh, no.
Hey, oh, it's diaper rash.
Diaper rash, yeah.
Diaper rash from edibles.
That's horrible.
My grandson gave me a couple of edibles, three of them to be exact. And I thought they were just gummies. So I ate them all three at once, and an hour later I was doing a Friday night show with Gene. Boy, was I stoned.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Funny thing is, they went out. They decided they wanted to go to the place up here for Halloween Horror Nights at the park. So, shit, damn. You could have warned me, boy. I had a radio show to do.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, that is too funny. I tell you, edibles and young people, can't trust them. Can't trust them. But
yeah.
I will say that I do think it was the brand or whatever that wherever my son got them from, because the thing is I have a friend who came to visit from Florida, and she makes homemade edibles with her slow cooker. And she makes both the gummies and chocolates. And I tried the milk chocolate, and I tried the dark chocolate, forgetting that I'd had the allergic reaction before. And I didn't have a reaction to those. So
yeah,
I don't know. There was definitely, yeah. So if I ever do edibles again, I'm making them homemade in my slow cooker.
Oh, yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah, right.
My daughter actually has a business called Baked in East Van, and she does edibles and all that stuff too. So I get treated to that.
Cool.
You can buy cookies and brownies.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for the comments, and thank you, Rex, for the inspiration.
Where to next?
All right, let's see here. I think I am going to go ahead and grab, I know, there we go. There we go. I'm going to go ahead and grab Graves home and do. All right. There you go, Gray. Your poem is up. Go ahead and give it a read for us.
Sure. This is by Gray I. Smith, and it's called Follow Your Gut. They said the ditches were filled with blood if you walk down that road, especially at nighttime, where there was only the howl of a wolf and the croak of a lonely toad. Being the rebellious spirit I am, I could not believe what they had to say. I could only do things my way. I took that road, and the howl belonged to an abandoned dog, hungry and alone. Seeking refuge from the fog, he followed me home that night. I would forever be the end of his plight. That toad, well, I guess he got peace from the howling. That was his refuge bestowed. As for the ditches filled with blood, that was nothing but red mud. I learned something that night. Follow your gut, because it's always right. End poem.
Great read, Gray. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
I like this. Awesome write on learning to trust your instinct. You know, great. I like how you tell a story with not a lot of lines. Like, it's longer than most of your writes, but it's still, for a story write, you really get straight to the point, it makes me think of the whole idea of licking the toad. I took that road, and the howl belonged to an abandoned dog, hungry and alone, seeking refuge from the fog. He followed me home, and that night I would forever be the end of his plight. That toad, well, I guess he got peace from the howling. That was his refuge bestowed. As for the ditches filled with blood, that was nothing but red mud. There's a very psychedelic feel to it. You know what it makes me think of? It makes me think of the story, There Was an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly. Why did she swallow the fly? I don't know why, but I guess she'll die. You know, and it almost has that kind of feel to it. Like, I feel like this was one of those writes that it's great the way it stopped, but at the same time, it could have kept going on and on with all this different images that kept going through your head. I also really like the line, being the rebellious spirit that I am, I could not believe what they had to say. I could only do things my way. Like, you can't believe people, you know, who tell you the straight and narrow path you're supposed to walk. I really feel like this fits well, even though it's a pre-write, it fits really well with tonight's topic because of that particular part. Being the rebellious spirit that I am, I could not believe that they had to say what they had to say. I feel like that really fits well with the whole Keith Richards attitude. So great right here, Gray, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I appreciate your comments.
Nice. All right, Gray. Sometimes, this is a moral tale. Sometimes when you walk the mysticism and belief paths while forgetting the original meaning and the stories behind them. You walk a lonely road because you're scared of all that is around. That thought of the ditches that run with blood, the howl of a wolf and the croak of a lonely toad bring out age-old stories that had been misinterpreted or rewritten, so to speak, so as to keep the fear within a line of people or a belief system. Now, the back end of this where you sit there, I can do things my way. I can only do things my way is the idea of walking outside of that because, you know, there's always a little bit more that underlies something than just the fact that ditches run red with blood because you don't really see that until you actually get up close and find out the red mud, usually red clay, because a lot of land around here and up there, part of the landscape is red clay. It's what peoples back in the day were using to fashion pots and urns and everything else to cook with. So the idea of walking outside of that loop and then finding your own roots still talks to that howl because you found something that was lonely in the moment. The howl was that cry for help. And the croak with the toad is that note to actually finding peace. You find peace in your travel by picking up the dog, bringing it home, which then becomes a friend and co-conspirator in your travel. And the toad finds peace in the forest because that hungry dog is no longer howling like the wind. And you're right. Sometimes you can take in what people say, but if you don't follow your own gut, then you're doomed to actually walk that road that they are walking. And sometimes that's never enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful comment. Thank you for being so deep.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure. All right, Pam, where would you like to go?
All right. Well, up next we have When Hearts Entwine by Arcana Amore. And we have a SoundCloud for that, so here we go.
As night cascades on moon-drenched eyes, a waxen face calls to darkened skies, in torrents of chants that hope recounts, to summon forth absence, to speak and rise. With words that sing to the raven's wing, where shadows cling, such sadness they bring. Emptiness probes the widow's black robes, amid mournful cries, sad spirits spring. Drifting prayer rises above autumn air, who saw somber skies with tender care, remiss of the bliss from a loved one's kiss, as darkness must bear devotion to swear. Ethereal dance with dark romance invites lost love to waltz and prance above the clouds that flow in shrouds towards the one who sought to glance. A star stifled scream dwells a fallen dream. O beloved arms, to embrace and redeem. With deep laments, the heart repents from years of tears that wept a stream. To seek a sign where heavens above shine and bring some comfort on which to dine. Then answer a stare to show they're there, should stars align when hearts entwine.
Great read, Arcana. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Gray, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, amazing read. You know, he did a fantastic job with his SoundCloud and that haunting echo voice. I really enjoyed it a lot. His read really brought the poem to life. You know, it's this dark darkness and then, you know, the light shines at the end. You know, a drifting prayer rises above autumn hair to soar somber skies with a tender care, remiss of the bliss from a loved one's kiss, as darkness must bear devotion to swear. You know, that's just very impactful, right? I really enjoyed it. So thank you very much for sharing.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Pam?
Oh, yeah. This is definitely a wonderful dark write with a great touch of romanticism to it. Great performance piece, you know, elegant use of language. I like the delicate touch of alliteration. Where shadows cling, such sadness they bring. Emptiness probes the widow's black robes amid mournful cries, sad spirits spring. You can just feel this woman's sadness. You know, it's an excellent write on the idea of lost love, that the heart eternally cries to be brought back. You know, so wonderful lines and very well done.
Yes, it is. But I think it walks a little darker path than that. It hits on the idea of necromancy. You hit on that. And torrents a chance that hope recants to summon forth absence to speak and rise. There's a note of necromancy there, the thought of witchery bringing back the dead. Then again, with words that sting to the raven's wing, where shadows cling, such sadness they bring. Emptiness probes the widow's black robes amid mournful cries, sad spirits spring. Again, that thought to, it almost has that, if you know, remember Pet Cemetery. You place them in this right place, and they will come forth and back to you. But the problem is, they're not always the same as they were. They're never the same as they return. And then that kind of hits on the back end of that. Seek a sign when heavens above shine, and bring some comfort on which to dine. Then answer a stare to show they're there. Should stars align when hearts entwine? The idea of being that struck with the idea of mortality and love, that you can actually bring someone back to life to the point where you can still enjoy that that angle, that you're willing to sacrifice anything and everything in getting there. And it is the sacrifice which meets the bane of that full moon, because neither one will be happy. Nicely done, Arcana. Thank you.
Absolutely. It's some necromancing romancing. Very cool. Great observations there, Rex.
Isn't that what they call romancing the bone?
I believe so, yes. And if they don't, whoever they are, they should.
Yeah.
All right. Hello. Well, up next, we have Drown Out the Voices by Richard Wiseman. And we have an audio for that one, too. So here we go.
Drown Out the Voices by Richard Wiseman. Turn down a higher paying job in L.A. because New York grime feels vital to creativity. Manhattan is deep-throated contact. L.A. is a void where isolation of car, of auto, is complete along Mulholland's parched brown hilltops, ever thirsting for life. It's a desert. Nothing lives out there. If Renaissance phoenixes, Manhattan will be its puking core. I squirmed doubtful, but hope still. His skin shivered. Dark memories echoed through. Something crawls deep inside, sparks dim memories of early 80s, of knee-bouncy cocaine shooters who mechanically genuflect at sight of Cathedral and open-armed, gray-stoned Mary while dreaming of that final score strong enough for permanent West Texas cure. Outer thought passageways cycle me to present, 15 years sober now, though junky nightmares still haunt. Uptown subway passengers stare hateful at my scribblings, despising my escape from stand clear of the closing doors. Monotony which prisons them. Monday morning angst, urgency to wail, dark pain resurfaces. Lunchtime, pain exploded onto paper. Silence mists the corporate cafeteria. Urban air stifles like breathing coffin death. Bury myself deep in word image paint. Pray for release from the millions of insignificant regrets that disempower my day. Shouldn't have said about dieting, him being obese. Forgot to offer condolences on the death of her. Waste half my life regretting some meaningless encounter. Then there's the huge life decision mistakes. Shouldn't have gambled my savings. Shouldn't have gotten her pregnant. Shouldn't have become a junkie. Self-inflicted tortures, lightless, narrow-hauled prisons. And this pained existence turns to pain-killing blanched powders to drown out the voices of my abusers momentarily, which births deeper cycles of self-destruction, heightened realms of despair, remorse, surrender to life's pointlessness. And this realization opens fate's door to mysticism. End poem.
Great read, Richard. Thank you for the sound card. It's very much appreciated. All right, Pam, you get to start.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there. I'm glad Richard shared this one. I felt it fit really well with the topic for tonight. Strong imagery and meta throughout, you know, really visceral and raw, gritty lines. I like how he takes us back in time to the drug culture of the 1980s and to the life of a recovering addict. I like this all the way through, but I particularly like the line, nothing lives out there if Renaissance phoenixes, Manhattan will be its puking core. I squirm doubtful, but hope still. His skin shivered, dark memories echoed through. And then 15 years sober now, though junkie nightmares still haunt, uptown subway passengers stare hateful at my scribbling, despising my escape from stand clear at these closing doors, monotony which prisons them. I like how that speaks on the idea that we're all a prisoner of something. And then the end lines with the mention of the pain-killing blanched powders drown out the voices of my abusers momentarily, with birds, deeper cycles of self-destruction. You know, it touches on the thought of why oftentimes people get into drug use and how there's that fine line between, you know, self-abuse and self-awareness. So wonderful lines all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Pam. And Dre, how about you?
Yeah, he did an amazing read with his SoundCloud. And I really like it. You know, it's a day in the life of an addict that's struggling to live life, you know, through the pain and misery that he's either had inflicted on himself or brought onto himself. Shouldn't have gambled my savings, shouldn't have gotten her pregnant, shouldn't have become a junkie. You know, self-inflicted tortures, lightless, narrow-headed, narrow-hulled prisons, and this pain's existence turned into pain-killing, blanched powders to drown out the voices of my abusers. You know, so he switches from self-torment to abuse, and I think that's where a lot of addicts end up, you know, being addicted, is trying to fight those memories. So, yeah, fantastic, right?
Nice. Thank you. You look at that picture. That's got to be at least 2 8-balls right there. That's quite a chunk of coke. Anyway, turned down a high-paying job in L.A. because New York grime feels vital to creativity. Manhattan, a deep-throated contact. L.A. is void, where isolation of car, of auto, is complete along Mulholland's parched brown hilltops. It's a nice touch to that, but it's a double note. You think everything revolves, in essence, everything does revolve around what happens in Manhattan, but only to a point. You've got to your certain scenes which do well. The thought of Broadway and its plays, the thought of Wall Street, those angles work well. But he also hits on the thought of L.A. It's kind of funny because everything starts on West Coast in California, then gets imported, becomes home in New York, and then spreads further. So it's kind of funky because in the 20s, in Hollywood's heyday, they were holding huge, massive parties out in that kind of desert landscape where nothing was out there, and you could get anything you wanted, do anything you wanted, and nobody gave a rat's ass because there was nobody around for miles who knew what was going on at all. And that include all manner of vile and subterranean notes to what the flesh wants or what the mind can dig into. Anyway, the idea of using the grime of New York instead of the what might be toned as the bright sunny skies of California hits on the idea that you got to live in the grime to produce. That thought that you roll with noir scenery, the thought of Mickey Spillane and others who walked that vein of how New York City used to be back in the days, the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, so on. But there was that the 80s was the big dip in cocaine use. Miami became that home port where everything flowed in easily. And that thought with the West Texas cure, that hits on the idea of making it in Manhattan to the point where you can count yourself as one of those new robber oil barons in Texas, where the rich and wealthy go home to enjoy their ranch lands after they've made themselves pure and rich beyond all manner of means. That's a nice touch. I like that thought. And then the bottom end of this, self-inflicted tortures, lightless, narrow-hauled prisons. It doesn't matter what whether it's Wall Street, whether it's the banking industry, whether it's on Broadway trying to make yourself. It all comes off as prisons, towers, and filled with powder and pills and whatever else you need in the moment to get you to where you want to be, but always it's a self-destructive motif that more often than not leads you down to the bottom of the barrel where you're walking the streets along with the other Freudian slips. Nicely done there, Richard. Thank you. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, let me, I did post the next poem, but I got a little buried, so I will go ahead and repost that again, and it is Life by S. Sharp. And go ahead and give that a read, Rex.
Life by F. Sharp. It's an addiction like the feeble sun circling me day and night, burning, yearning for my approval. How the lonely moon, attracted to my tides, hangs over my shoulder, pulling, begging for my attention, or the way the wind flirts incessantly, blowing shadows, kisses into the meadow amongst the cattails where I dance, dreaming of tomorrow. And poem. All right there, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Great read there, Rex. You know, Scott has a real talent for brevities and using imagery and metaphors. I like that he takes addiction into a different realm. This is almost the idea to me of that natural high. It speaks to me on a couple of different levels. Of course, you know, I get the impression that part of this is about gravity. How, we can't avoid gravity. It's drawn to us, or we're drawn to it, however I guess you would say it. But it's also the interconnection, the dependency of all life towards each other, and this, you know, and towards the earth. I like how all lines lead like so nicely into the next. But I really particularly like hangs over my shoulders, pulling, begging for my attention, or the way the wind flirts incessantly, blowing shadows, kisses into the meadow amongst the cattails where I dance, dreaming of tomorrow. It's that whole natural addiction of just feeling the sun and the wind on your skin. So wonderful, thoughtful lines all the way through, and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Gray, how about you?
Yeah, that was a great write, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. You know, it really captures the highs of life, you know, like Pam said, you know, that we're all addicted to and find happiness and our connection to and get lost in, you know, the beauty of living just by the moon tugging at your, you know, at you and, you know, begging for your attention. And I thought it was wonderful, right? You know, it really is. You could put yourself in his footsteps quite clearly and easily. So excellent, right?
All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to go with Earth, life, the planet itself, the living entity, because he has a circling me day and night, burning, yearning for my approval. Again, Earth itself, how the lonely moon attracted to my tides hangs over my shoulder, pulling, begging for my attention. I like that note of touch because the moon is what controls our tides. And then a thought for begging, or the wind, or the way the wind flirts incessantly, blowing shadows, kisses into the meadow amongst the cattails where I dance, dreaming of tomorrow. That idea of everything that is born of the earth, that rolls within the earth, all comes about because of you've got the sun rolling around, you've got the moon affecting, you've also got Jupiter, which affects a good portion of our, not just our sustenance, how the planet works itself, the thought to where we get large volcanic eruptions sometimes. That's the pull from Jupiter, along with the bulge that we see is because of that pull from Jupiter, and it affects climate and wind. So everything walks around in a cyclical motion, and it's because the planet itself is alive. It breathes. It offers up that notion to you've got fresh water, you've got salt water, so you've got two kinds of aquatics. You've got snow-bound arenas. You've got life bountiful across the planet itself because of what it offers. So, nicely done there, Scott. Thank you. All right, Pam.
All right. Do you want to get one more in, Or do you want
sure.
the last three to be? Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, our last poem for the night, and then we will have two carryovers for next week, will be Puppet of Addiction by Mystic Muse. And go ahead, Gray, and give that a read for us, please.
Sure. Puppet of Addiction by Mystic Muse. Addiction is a puppeteer. You're dangled on a string. Your journey goes from joy to pain. Then you don't feel a thing. Perverted Punch and Judy shows are all you ever play. The master's in control of you, and you can't break away. A frail and pasty marionette, you aptly played your role, a servant to your demons. They devour your very soul. End poem.
Great read, Gray. Thank you very much. And Dan?
Yeah, I was very thankful to Dave for sharing this extra write with for us. It fits really well with the topic. Great rhyme and flow, excellent brevity all the way through. But I did particularly like the perverted punch and Judy shows are all you ever play. That idea of that addiction to pain and to porn, you know, the reference to the old Punch and Judy, whatever you call those puppets, I thought was quite clever. And then also where it says, a servant to your demons, they devour your very soul. So what you thought you originally had control of eventually controls you. Great write and very well done.
Thank you, Dan. Gray, you got to read it. How about you?
The whole time I was reading it, Master of Puppets, Pulling My Strings, Master, Master, by Metallica came to mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's definitely an album about drug addiction, as is this poem, which has the same kind of effect, you know, of being puppet on strings and not in control of anything. And, you know, a servant to your demons, they devour your very soul. That's an epic ending for sure. Great job, Dave.
Excellent. Thank you, Gray. I had the very same thought, the Metallica and Master Puppets, because it does walk that very same flavor. And it doesn't even have to be a drug addiction. It could be the alcohol. It could be the thought to giving it all for work only to be destroyed because there's no appreciation there in the back end. It could be a whole lot of other addictions, sex or other unwieldy angles to addiction. They all offer up that very note in that last stanza. A frail and pasty marionette, you actively played your role, a servant to your demons. They devour your very soul. I think those last two lines are apropos because it walks along that angle, not just the addiction, but the fact that you've given up any propriety that you might have had to any religious angle that you once walked. In other words, you gave it all up for penny-ante activities, and now they leave you bereft at the end of all things. That's a nice, clever thought there, Dave. Thank you very much. And all right, we're at the back end of things. Great show, man. Thank you very much. Gray, thank you for joining us. Wonderful having you. And Hats and Jen for the board, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And you all have a good evening, and we'll do this again next Tuesday.
Great show, Rex. Much love, everybody.